Hey, everybody. This is Andy Marquette. I am joined by my colleague and friend, Lise McTague. Woo! We are Les Geek Out, where we geek out over things, fan things, comics, movies, books, TV shows, podcasts, and whatever else we feel we need to geek out about. How are you, Lise?
I'm awesome. Happy New Year.
That's right, you guys. Recording, it's New Year's Day. Oh, my God.
And we're recording in the day, like, and not at night, which is also a little weird for us.
That's a little weird. It's kind of throwing me off. Oh, well.
I know. I have a dew instead of a beer.
Yeah, I know. Right? We're not drinking alcohol, friends. Did that. Okay. What did you do for the New Year? Did you do anything fun and exciting?
Nope. Let's see. I shared a bottle of champagne with my wife. And then went to bed at 9:30 and put earplugs in so that I could sleep through randos setting off firecrackers all night. I'm so exciting.
Remember back in the day when we would, like, at least I did, would go out to a club at 11 o'clock, ring in the new year, then go out to breakfast at 2 in the morning. Oh, my God. Ah, youth, whatever. Anyway, same. I, like, watched Netflix and, like, you know, batten down the hatches. And yeah, it was crazy here last night, just like fireworks. And I'm pretty sure some was gunshots. So I just kind of stayed inside.
I always assume that they're fireworks because I don't want to. Yeah, I feel better with my assumptions.
Right, exactly. Okay, anyway, friends. We are starting off the new year, woohoo, with a discussion of a fabulous webcomic turned published graphic novel, Nimona, by the immensely talented, I don't know, maybe she's a child prodigy, who the hell knows, Noelle Stevenson, who is responsible for Lumberjanes, and Lise and I also did a show on Lumberjanes. We'll probably have to do another show on Lumberjanes simply because I love Lumberjanes. But anyway, Nimona. Let's talk Nimona, and Lise is the one who got me turned on to this because Lise is like the resident webcomic expert, and even though it's not a webcomics anymore, it's still kind of got its start that way. So, you know, there you go. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to, like, tell everybody, and oh, by the way, light spoilers, friends, light spoilers. You cannot discuss this comic without sort of kind of spoiling a few things about it. But that definitely is not going to detract from your reading experience. So what I'm doing here is Cory Doctorow, a fellow sci-fi writer, did a really nice review of Nimona, which is a YA graphic novel. It was a finalist for the National Book Award. So that should tell you something about that. He did this over at Boing Boing. And he says that he's late to the party on Nimona, but boy, I'm glad I got here because it is awesome. And what he says, you know, basically what we have here is Nimona, who is a young shapeshifter, and she wants to be a sidekick to supervillain. I love his name. I love these names. Ballister Blackheart. Dun, dun, dun. And his arch nemesis, Ambrose Goldenloin. So here's Nimona. She wants to, like, do supervillain things, but runs up into Ballister's really kind of interesting moral compass in that there are certain rules to supervillainry when you're dealing with your arch nemesis, who apparently happens to be a friend, possibly lover from the past, and an incident put them at odds and sent Ballister down the supervillain path. Now, what's interesting about this comic is that it starts out one way. It's a fantasy with science fiction and science tropes. Well, not tropes, but, like, elements that, like, make it really intriguing. Mm-hmm. It starts in one direction and then it becomes something else entirely. And that, to me, was what was so freaking amazing about it. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Lise, and tell us a little bit more about Nimona and her relationship with Ballister and what Ballister's actually doing as an quote-unquote arch-villain.
Yeah, so we see pretty much most of what happens is from Nimona's point of view, though we do switch over to some other, you know, characters' POV, which I think makes for, like, a really nice sort of balanced story. We get to see a lot of what's going on behind the scenes, but not so much that, you know, you're not surprised when things come up. Mm-hmm. And kind of Nimona just sort of like lands in Blackheart's lap. Like he's off doing his supervillain things and she shows up and it's like, hey, I'm your sidekick now. And he's like, really, no. And she's like, no, actually I am. And so he essentially takes her out on a practice run, right? Which the practice run is super successful, but also very destructive and violent, which even though Blackheart, you know, is the supervillain, you know, like you said, his moral compass kind of doesn't necessarily allow him to go for like full-fledged destruction. And this is where we first get to see that, okay, maybe there's something here beyond just like your typical supervillain trope, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's not out necessarily for, I just want to be in charge of everything because I'm the bad guy and that's what bad guys do. There's something driving him. And Nimona, on the one hand, was a super effective sidekick for him. On the other hand, she's like completely opposite sort of his moral compass. And he has to figure out, can he partner with her in a way that allows him to accomplish his goals, but also allows him to still be like who he is.
Mm-hmm.
While meanwhile, Nimona is sort of having the opposite thing. I think she realizes pretty quickly that, oh wait, Blackheart isn't kind of the way I thought this supervillain would be. And she's suddenly being constrained in a way that I think we find out pretty quickly she's not used to.
Exactly. One of the things that I really enjoyed as you go through the comic and you end up, you know, about halfway, maybe two thirds of the way through, is that Ballister has developed an affection for Nimona and he has become sort of really protective of her because mm-hmm. I think he recognizes in her a traumatic past, that there's something that happened to her. She tells him this like goofy ass story about how she got her shape-shifting powers and it turns out that it's not true. And then as we go on, we find out that there's some kind of trauma that is involved here with Nimona and what drives her. But he too has suffered a trauma because he got into a jousting match with his friend, possibly ex-lover, Golden Loin, and in the aftermath of that duel, Golden Loin shot off his arm. And so he ends up with a really cool prosthesis, but that's not the point. The point is Ballister's carrying this wound that he was betrayed by this man that he thought was his, you know, friend slash possibly lover. It's never really clear, but you can kind of go there. Mm-hmm. And we find out, and I think what we need to really think about too, is that Golden Loin is working for something called the Institute. And it's this sort of, I would call it an evil think tank.
An evil think tank that's masquerading as like the forces of good.
Exactly. Like your benevolent overlords, if you will. And mm-hmm. Ballister comes to realize, he uncovers through that one of their, you know, actions that he and Nimona undertook, since she manages to score some of their evil plans and he deciphers them and he finds out they're manufacturing super weapons, like really scary shit. And so he's like, oh my God, we have to like do something about this, because he's not really as villainy as you would think. You know, a true super villain would immediately call the Institute, blackmail them, and try to partner with them on building super weapons. Ballister's like, oh my God, this is terrible. This is you know, this is wrong. We have to do something. So that was really interesting too, is putting Golden Loin as part of this Institute, but he's not really part of it. He's always kind of like, it doesn't sit right with him. And so we kind of watch that develop through the course of the novel.
Yeah. The Institute is also really the ones who are responsible for Blackheart becoming this outcast. You know, I mean, at the beginning with this joust, you get the idea eventually that basically it happened to find out like who would be the chosen one. And the Institute puts their money behind Golden Loin, essentially engineering Blackheart as the supervillain that then Golden Loin can exist to, you know, be in sort of constant conflict with.
Mm-hmm. That's true. They did. So they're basically doing a lot of social engineering up in here. And we find out that there may actually be a tie between Nimona and her shape-shifting and possibly experimentation on the part of the Institute. So you kind of then understand why she has it in for this like complete mass destruction of everything. You know, she's coming from a place of trauma, and I loved watching Ballister come to realize that and how he became super, super protective of Nimona, who has been targeted for literal assassination by the Institute. The Institute. And so they put Golden Loin on that. They want Golden Loin to assassinate her. And he's like, she's a kid. I can't do that. So you see these really interesting moral codes at play, like who's really the bad person, or maybe there is no real bad person. Maybe it's all shades of gray, and we're all responsible for the choices we make. That was deep.
It is really deep. And I mean, but that's what I love about this graphic novel. I mean, on the one hand, you know, on the surface, and you know, we see this with Noelle Stevenson's work, the surface is like fun and happy-go-lucky, and it shows you a lot of what we expect to see. But the further we get into it, the more she like shifts and gets at what's underneath. And then she starts like really playing with those conventions and those tropes and then standing them on their heads. And she just does such awesome stuff with, you know, with our expectations and how she subverts them constantly throughout her work.
Yes, she does. Let's talk a little bit about Noelle. She started working on this webcomic that she was posting on Tumblr, and she was doing this like in 2012-ish. And it actually doubled as her senior thesis at the Maryland Institute College of Art. So she's a comics writer and artist, but she does a whole hell of a lot more, and we'll talk about that in a minute. I don't know very much about her, as you know, from her background prior to going to the Institute of Art, but she does have this really, I don't know if playful is the right word. You know, she kind of starts out playful with all these really cool characters, and they're interesting and they're relatable. And then all of a sudden she starts peeling back those layers. Mm-hmm. And like, even in Lumberjanes, there are layers. Yeah. There are layers that are going on, and she very carefully introduces those to you. And then all of a sudden you're in the thick of something else. It started as one thing, and then you suddenly realize, holy crap, what is this now? And it makes complete sense how it got there when you look back on it. It's the same for Nimona. It starts as one thing. You know, there's this medieval kind of setup, the supervillain, but there's like technology and fantasy and the shapeshifter, and you're like, oh, okay, this is gonna be fun. And then about halfway through, you realize, wait a second, what's happening here? And you've got like this overarching institute that is sort of creating, and I love how Nimona then and Ballister in kind of engineer sort of a rebellion, mm-hmm, basically against the institute. And there's like chaos and change, and Ballister still is trying to protect Nimona through the whole thing, because throughout this he has come to realize that, you know, she is a kid in a lot of ways and has been traumatized, and he would really like to help her somehow. And he's just heartbroken towards the end when she basically kind of disappears. Or does she?
Dun, dun, dun. What Noelle Stevenson does so well is that she, with the one hand, she starts out and she offers us this story that's very plot driven. But the further you get into it, you realize that no, that's not what's going on here. These are actually character studies.
Mm.
These are character driven stories. They're not plot driven stories, but we go into it thinking they are. And so events start to reveal the characters and their interactions with each other, you know, are what peel away those layers and allow us to experience them within the context of the story, the same way that the characters are. And I love when authors can do that, but without having to explain that they're doing that.
Author narrative voice. And now we will see Nimona's true motivations.
True motivations revealed.
I think Stevenson is, she's a master at it. I mean, let's she's an absolute master at it. And we saw it in Lumberjanes, see it in Nimona, which, by the way, friends, Nimona is going to become a film, an animated film for release in 2020. That's the latest information that I have. It's also available as an audiobook. So you can do a whole lot of things with this story. And she is so versatile and has demonstrated how you can do those things. I wanted to also, Lise, this is your bailiwick, talk about the art. Let's talk about the art.
Yeah, I really like the stylization in this one. So it has kind of a sketchy quality, which fits the story pretty well, I think, especially the whole, like, Nimona's character. She's a shapeshifter, so she's not really static, right? So this that sketchy quality kind of sort of helps bring to mind this like feeling of constant movement and never really settling, which I think is works so well for Nimona because physically she's that way. And I think also mentally and emotionally she's that way because of her trauma. She can't allow herself to dwell. She's always, you know, she's got to be moving forward.
Or somewhere.
Yeah. So that she's not looking back. And it works, you know, super well for her. One of the other things I love is that Stevenson has given her characters like tiny little hands and feet. Which is just, I mean, I love the look. I also really like, so Nimona is a full-figured character. You know, she's not a skinny, I mean, she's busty, yeah, but man, she's got hips for days. She is a bigger woman. And she's not like, you know, some scrawny little
whippersnapper thing.
Yeah, that we're used to seeing women depicted as in comics.
That's, you know, true.
I mean, she has way more substance to her than either of the male main characters. Like both Blackheart and Golden Boy are these like kind of like twiggy, gangly little guys. And then there's Nimona who just like kind of busts in and she's like, bam, she is there. She is solid.
Which is interesting because she's a shapeshifter.
Mm-hmm.
But yet she's presented as one of the more solid figures.
Yeah.
I got the impression as I was reading this and looking, you know, kind of looking at the art as I went through that, there was sort of an evolution of style that happened. Did you pick up on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think you'll see that in pretty much anything that goes on over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
The beginning stuff is a lot sort of like sketchier and liney. And then the later stuff is more like, you know, solid shapes and like plays of dark and light and color. That's another thing Stevenson does really well. She has really nice color sense. And the palettes that she chooses are really sort of evocative of the emotions that are happening in the scenes.
Mm-hmm. I think it might have been Cory Doctorow who noticed that too, is that as the story progresses, like the colors become a lot richer and more, as you were just saying, evocative. And I always wonder if that's a function of an evolution of the artist's style over the years, because she worked on this for what? 3 years or throughout the course of her career at Maryland Institute College of Art Institute. Oh my God. What do you think it means? Anyway, or if it was just a logical, you know, evolution as she developed different styles, or if it was like something that she intentionally did. And it could be both though. I don't know, but you do notice that as the story towards the end, it's like super rich. There's a lot of color, but then there's also a lot of things happening at the end. And I know, Lise, that the end hits you right in the feels. So,
oh yeah, it did.
So can you talk about it, or are we going to have a moment?
Well, Wheatley is sitting by the door. He doesn't want out right now, so we can probably go for it.
Okay.
So the end is, it's hard. You know, there are parts of the ending which are just, you know, everything by this point is stripped away. We see the Institute and Golden Loin for, like, who and what they are. And we finally get a real feeling of who Nimona is and where she's coming from. And it is not pretty, you know. I mean, she's someone who has had to deal with a lot of trauma in her life and has dealt with it mostly by, you know, constant, by by being constantly in motion. You know, she's like a shark, and which is funny because we first see her like transform into a shark, but she's like a shark. If she stops moving, she dies, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she's trapped and she can't move anymore. And so everything comes to the fore, and we find out, you know, what her real past is, and the trauma, like this sort of deep trauma on so many levels. I mean, she has been betrayed by pretty much anyone who mm-hmm. can betray her.
Mm-hmm.
And she loses herself in it.
She does. I think, too, that's why Ballister is so heartbroken, because he's like the one constant in her life at that point, and
right.
tries really, really hard to be the one who's not going to betray her. And yet everything is such a train wreck mm-hmm. at the end that it's like impossible for him to reach her in some ways. Or is it?
Mm-hmm. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. Well, and it's not just that she loses herself in her trauma, but she sort of gives herself over to it.
Mm.
And not, I mean, not for bad reasons. Everything that she does makes complete sense in the context of what is going on and what has happened to her in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all there. It all ties together, and you can see why she does what she does. But man, you're right. I mean, train wreck doesn't do it justice. It's like five train wrecks and a boat accident on top of things.
And the Titanic. I mean, it's just like everything just, I mean, and I'm going to read now what Cory Doctorow has said about it. It's brought to a head when the Institute and Nimona come to one another's attention and they're set on a destruction course that can leave only one standing. So we've got Golden Loin and Blackheart as reluctant proxies with divided loyalties. The fight that brews, and Doctorow says it has a wonderful, rich complexity that works as a fine counterpoint to the slapstick and snappy dialogue that Stevenson excels at. So she's got, and that's true, like you see like really dark things happening, say in Lumberjanes, but there's like this snappy dialogue and kind of this lighthearted thing, the slapstick going on as well. So you're sort of like, oh my God, wow, this is really dark and intense, but yet I'm laughing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the hell is happening? And then Doctorow sums it up. He says, what emerges from this is a story about official corruption, loyalty, the rule of law, whistleblowing, civil disobedience, and the true face of monstrousness that works on so many layers. And that right there just summed it up for me, because as I was going through it, and I had to go back through and kind of like parse and like, wow, this is where she started really looking at this weird autocratic structure of the Institute. And here we see kind of Ballister cluing in to Nimona's background and how it's not what she said. Then we see that just unleashed at the end. And it's like you get where she's coming from, the rage, mm-hmm. the hurt, the pain. And he's so empathetic to that. He just like, oh my God, that final scene. The end of it was just like, it was, you come down, you got the denouement, but then you've got Ballister just still heartbroken because he feels like he couldn't reach her. Or could he? Because Stevenson kind of leaves it up in the air. Like the moon is still somewhere. She kind of maybe dropped by for a little bit mm-hmm. when he's in the hospital with what's his face and you know. So you just don't know for sure what happened. And there's that little moment of like, oh, Nimona! And he like goes out into the hallway to find her. And that's where we kind of leave the story. We don't know. Did he find her? Is she still there? We don't know. We don't know. I know we have
it's
to sit
a good
here
one.
For a moment. We have to sit here. Hold on, everyone. We're having a moment. Like... But it's true. I mean, it's a YA story, but
yeah.
It's so complex in how it's told. And I would say the same goes for a lot of the Lumberjanes. There's a complexity there that you don't see at first until you've read it and you're sitting there going, wow, what the hell? Then you go back through because then you realize where Stevenson was dropping kind of the bait to like lead you down another path and doing it so well that you didn't even know that mm-hmm. you were being led there. Can we get an amen for Noelle Stevenson?
Can we get a writer's masterclass from Noelle Stevenson?
Oh my please? God, for sure. We could tweet at her, see if she'll, we could be like, could you please teach us things? Mm-hmm. See how that works. Oh my God. So anyway, if you had to sum, if you were trying to convince somebody to read Nimona, what would you tell them?
Boy.
I know, right? I was thinking about this too. I was like, how can I get people to read this? Because it's, besides saying it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, because it is fucking awesome, but it's hard to boil down. You know? It's
exactly right.
It's just so complex, but it's not complex in a way that makes you wonder what's going on. It's complex in a way that makes you wonder what else is like under the surface, but not to the point where you're confused.
It's, I love the ambiguous morality.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that I really loved about it is like, the supervillain maybe isn't really a supervillain. You know, he's not necessarily a good guy. His motivations are, you know, revenge mm-hmm. And pain and hurt. But he's not necessarily bad as he, like, right. tries to guide Nimona from being so overtly destructive. And mm-hmm. then we get a little taste of Ambrose Goldenloin. And you find out that his motivations aren't necessarily bad either. And but he's not good either because he's weak. No. He like in a moment of weakness allowed himself to be manipulated by the Institute. And then we see like a few people from the Institute and they're just heinous. Like there's just like nothing redeemable there. Can we just like call that a metaphor for corporate autocratic bullshit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The corruption of absolute power, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It comes through really well there. You know, maybe at one point they had better motives, but at this point it's all about holding on to the power that they have.
And doing whatever you can to keep it.
Mm-hmm. And Blackheart is a threat to that power. So they have to keep him down.
Right.
And then Nimona comes along and makes him so much more effective, and that's when it's like, okay, we have to hammer these two. And that's what blows up in their faces.
Mm-hmm. Blows up in everybody's faces. Oh my God. It's like towards the end when the people realize that this but allegedly benevolent institute is not at all benevolent mm-hmm. and watching, you know, the realization kind of sweep through and that there's sort of uprisings and then there's a crackdown and it's just like, oh my God, you know, it was a very delicate balance and Nimona is the one ingredient that comes along and upsets this balance and then the veil's off. Everybody's like, holy shit, this is really what's been going on.
Yeah. Which of course doesn't get us any closer to getting people to read it.
I know. You guys just fucking read it. It's Noelle Stevenson. It's fucking awesome. There.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's fun and complicated and lighthearted and gets you right in the feels. It's the full package.
It's the whole package. I mean, this is well worth the price of admission. Freaking do it. Support this woman's art. Oh my God. Any final thoughts on Nimona?
Read it.
I love how Lisa's able to distill certain things into like, yes, read it. It's available just about everywhere. You know, you can get it through Comixology on Amazon. You can get it at your library. You can order it.
That's where I got it.
Yep. HarperCollins. You can do an e-reader. You can do actual physical, you know, whatever. Just get a copy of it and make sure your kids read it. This is really appropriate for young adults and kids. I think mm-hmm. they will really enjoy it. And it'll open a lot of discussions about, you know, morality and what's right, what's wrong, and choices people make, and trauma, which is super important for people to be able to fully discuss that. So it'll hit you right in the feels, friends. Be prepared. Okay, so Lise, guess what?
What?
It's time to talk about other things we've been doing and watching, what? Listening to, reading, whatever. Do you have anything?
I do. In fact, I was texting you about this the other day. Rivers Solomon's An Unkindness of Ghosts, which I read over my Christmas break and is, oh my goodness, it's one of those books that kind of like hollows you out while you're reading it.
Oh, that it sounds great. Sign me up. Nothing like a black hole in your chest. I love it.
In
okay.
such a good way. It's a sci-fi novel. It's set sort of on another one of like these generation starships, similar in concept to what we saw in Cameron Hurley's The Stars Are Legion, but completely different in execution. Mm-hmm.
All right, give us the author.
Rivers Solomon.
Oh, okay. That is the author. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. And the ship is, you know, has all these different decks, and different functions happen on different decks. And the lower down you go in the decks, the lower in social status the people are, until the bottom decks are basically people who are enslaved for the good of the ship. And our main character is one of those from sort of the bowels of the ship. She is a young woman of color who has some, want to say some, you know, her sex is expressed sort of somewhat ambiguously, which is apparently a thing further down, in the ship. But she's incredibly intelligent, and she is becoming aware that things are not right on the ship. Beyond just the crappy way that they're being treated, the ship is kind of falling apart around them.
Oh wow.
And she has to deal with, you know, the death of her mother when she was a baby, but her mother was also like super into this, and so she's trying to like retrace her steps, while also being hooked into people who are higher up. And yeah, it's really, really amazing story.
Oh my God, that sounds fabulous. Oh, damn it.
Gotta read it right now.
Okay. Adding to the list. Okay. Well, y'all, in keeping with my Noelle Stevenson week, I finished binging She-Ra, The Princesses of Power, that launched on Netflix. It's season one is available on Netflix. So if you have Netflix, you know, why are you still listening to this? Go and stream this immediately.
Gotta go.
Noelle Stevenson is the showrunner for the reboot of She-Ra. And it's again, Noelle Stevenson. There's a lot of kind of moral ambiguity, you know, consequences of your choices, who's good, who's bad, and cloaked in snappy dialogue and fabulosity all around, with a primary relationship here. And for those of you who are, you know, remember the first She-Ra, this is a very different take. And what we have here is a universe in which we've got the Horde, which is the evil entity, the evil soldiers that are trying to take over the entire planet. And then we've got, you know, the Rebellion, which are like, you know, all of these princesses with certain powers. And for whatever reasons, their alliance was broken. So now they're just individual kingdoms or princessdoms and defending against the Horde when the Horde shows up. And we've got one of the primary characters, Adora, who is raised in the Horde from a child, and you see her being raised by one of the Horde's primary generals, I'll call her, Shadow Weaver, who draws her power from a specific kind of runestone, but she's like super evil, okay? Or we think she is. Or is she really evil? This is Noelle Stevenson, after all. Mm-hmm. We don't know for sure. So Adora ends up being shown the realities of what the Horde is actually perpetuating on the planet. And she's horrified. She's just like, what the actual hell? And she ends up in the company of Princess Glimmer, who has the ability to transport herself like in and out. And her mother is like queen of the kingdom of Bright Moon. So Adora ends up with Glimmer and Glimmer's best friend, Bo, this really cool dude who is either pan or bi or gay. It's just like, he's just like all about everybody. So these three, and he's a great archer, hence the name Bo. So these three are kind of trying to rebuild the Princess Alliance to withstand the Horde. And there's all kinds of like other things going on, and not one of the other things that is going on is Adora's relationship with her previous soldier colleague, Catra of the Horde. And Stevenson, I think, loves to do this kind of love-hate relationships between primary characters, because there's definitely a love-hate here. That there's love, and there may even have been a thing, who knows. That one of the episodes, we get to see them as kids growing up in the Horde, and we see Adora start going one way and Catra go the other way, and then we see that Catra always felt sort of beneath Adora, even though Adora never consciously thought that and was always supportive of her and always protective of her. And Catra felt like she was being stifled or stymied. And so there's a few moments and a whole episode at one point devoted to the relationship between these two characters that is so tense and angst-ridden. And it just like hits you right in the feels. And you're just like, no, I can't believe Catra did that. No. And then, you know, it's, and then you see Adora when she's She-Ra and she's trying to learn how to control these powers, and she has no idea. She was just chosen. She inadvertently ended up as She-Ra, and she has no fucking clue what she's doing. And she tries to access the old ones, the first ones, tech, you know, to find out, how can I do this? I'm not good enough for this. I'm not worthy of this, because she's a Horde soldier, you know? Why am I the one chosen to lead, to protect everything? That's not me. So there's like all of this, oh no, what's going to happen? And then of course there's the snappy dialogue and the fun interactions. And then all of a sudden you're plunged into something really grim. Then you're brought back out. And oh my God, it's such a ride. She-Ra, Princesses of Power, everyone, watch it. This will give you an idea of who Noelle Stevenson is as a writer and as a woman who can create these amazing characters within a medium of animation. I mean, it's amazing. I loved it. I freaking loved it. Waiting for season two.
It's on my list.
So have you like started it at all or no?
No, we were finishing up Sabrina, and I've been trying to convince my wife to watch it with me. Yes, you do have to.
I've got it. Yeah, we got to talk about that one. I got to do that one. The thing about She-Ra is like the episodes are like literally 23 minutes long each.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it won't take me long. I want Lynn to watch it with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's been resistant so far.
It's Noelle Stevenson.
I know. I'm pounding that point home. I'm hoping we have some movement on that.
I mean, anything with that's Noelle Stevenson, like, you should just watch. I mean, there shouldn't even be a question. Just like,
freaking out. Agreed.
Whatever. Noelle, please teach a master class. Thank you. Thank you. So Noelle Stevenson is going to be around for quite a while, friends, because at this time, and she's She-Ra showrunner, say that five times fast. I think she's 26 or 27. So we will have lots of Noelle Stevenson for a long time to come. And that is all kinds of freaking awesome.
Love her, hate her.
We have a love-hate relationship with Noelle Stevenson's brilliance.
It's pure jealousy. That's all there is to it.
But we do love her. Okay. All right. Final thoughts, please. We got to wrap this baby up.
I don't know. Oh, God.
Read it.
Don't make me think. Yes, read it. Watch it. Read it again.
Watch it again.
Yes. That's good.
Okay, cool. All right, friends, that's it. That was, we were discussing Nimona, the fabulous comic by Noelle Stevenson, National Book Award finalist. Fabulous YA. It is YA appropriate and younger, actually. So definitely get your kids into that, because it's a great story. And you could read it several times and still not, I mean, this is something you can read over and over and you still won't get all the layers. I mean, that's how good this is. And that's great. Great conversations, as Lisa and I just demonstrated. Thank you. We are Les Geek Out. This is the Les Geek Out cast. I am Andy Marquette with my colleague and friend, Lise McTague. And please, everyone, Happy New Year, and have a great start to the year. Bye. Oh yeah, I forgot to tell everybody. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and everywhere else. Please like and subscribe, because we want others to find us too. And we would like you to find us and stay with us and be our friends. Thank you.
Be our friends.
We want friends and be on our show and all that.
Friends with us. It's not creepy at all.
Oh my God. Okay, so I should read this book you're talking about. I need to watch
Sabrina. And I have to watch She-Ra.
Oh my God, we have all these things we need to do. Oh, it's so hard being a geek.
It is. It's never ending.
Oh.
But this is how much we care about our listeners. We're willing to throw ourselves on these swords to bring them the best geekery that's available so they don't have to.
That's right. We're or something. So you don't have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And I think on that note.